Music, among other things.
Music among other things.
Music among other things.
So Neil, happy belated birthday. Well, I know it was a few weeks ago now.
Thank you.
But it was a lockdown birthday, but it actually looked like a good old time. Your girlfriend Sophie sorted you out with a good day.
Turned out to be one of the best birthdays, just because it was made, quite nice and special just at home. So my girlfriend, she'd surprised me with like this massive kind of putting mat, because I'm a big golfer, in the spare bedroom, and she proper kitted it out of like loads of balloons and a massive red velvet cake, and literally she'd gone all out on decorations and stuff. So it made the day just so much more special. So it was a really good day in the end.
It's interesting because Bayo was flying off to a golf course after we spoke to him on the pod, and he said he did say he was enjoying it, and he had a third lesson. So it seems like he's going to be
he's got the bug.
An avid golfer.
He has got the bug. It's a dangerous thing, getting the golf bug.
It's a good COVID sport though, isn't it?
It is. Hopefully it will be again at the end of this month. You never know. But it's normally like the first thing to open up, to be honest. Just because you technically don't literally need to come in contact with anyone or even touch the same ball or even flag sticks, all the boring stuff. You literally don't have to. You can always be COVID compliant.
Yeah, that's very true. And then you got the gift I sent to you from me and Chantel.
Yeah, so you got me the Taylor Swift Fearless album, which is one of my favourite albums of all time. And probably the best thing about that gift was the card that went with it. That will definitely put a post up on the pod, which your lovely girlfriend Chantel drew. I mean, I imagine it was Chantel that drew it, unless you've got some hidden talents as well. But it was a replica of myself doing the kind of swish Taylor Swift blonde hair swish thing that she's got going on the front cover of Fearless. But that album, I don't know why, it just does something to me. I think it's probably one of the only albums like AM where I genuinely know every single word to that album.
I'm not as familiar with her earlier stuff. I feel like I probably know the album I probably know the most is like Lover and like 1989 and Red.
Oh, what's wrong with you? You're missing out.
But my girlfriend's been trying to get me onto Fearless. Well, I do like the songs in it. I just don't know it as well. So it's sort of interesting because obviously we're going to do this chat about Taylor Swift today, and I always do our pull together the songs that make up Evermore and Folklore from last year and try and make a really strong album out of it, because they're sort of like they're labeled as like sister albums, and obviously 30 songs is a lot, but I thought it'd be interesting just to put together our favourites from each and then try and make an album out of it.
Super album. Yeah, definitely.
I think we briefly spoke about Folklore when it came out last year, and if people don't know, Folklore and Evermore, the album Taylor Swift brought out in 2020, so they were recorded very quickly in lockdown. Folklore came out in July, and Evermore came out in December. And they sort of, build the sister albums. Almost have a similar vibe. It's almost quite chill, quite mellow, quite melancholic, I'd say.
Yeah, quite wintry.
And I really enjoyed that side of Taylor. I don't think she'd ever gone that deep into that sort of those reference points before. But I know she was working with Aaron Dessner from The National and Jack Antonoff. Even The National actually featured on the second round, and Bon Iver as well. So obviously all these like titans of indie, the sort of indie side of things. But I thought that brought out a great sound for her. Do you know what I mean? As in, I really enjoyed 100%. Folklore and Sky, and I was like pleasantly surprised. I mean, I actually really enjoyed Lover, but I thought this was like a cool sort of turn for her, I think. What was your initial impression of Folklore when it came out?
Loved it, yeah, really loved it. I think for me, like, you know, like I said earlier, like, I love Fearless and stuff. It's not like I reject all her, like, her other stuff, because she's kind of grown as a person, of course. She's like, you know, all her pop songs and stuff. Like, I'm not a massive pop fan, but the pop songs she writes, they are bloody catchy, to be fair, in terms of, like, you remember them for, you know, forever. And, like, they're still good, catchy pop songs, you know. It's just that genre's not quite for me, but she can still write very good songs. I've always thought she's one of the best songwriters. But yeah, so when I gave Folklore a listen, I loved how stripped back it was. Like, it just looked, I don't know, the album cover for me just gets it perfectly. It looks exactly like the album cover, like a wintry, isolated feel. Like, it feels quite personal and quite stripped back, and it's almost like back to basics, really. You can tell she's just kind of gone away and made this, like, I don't know, it just feels really stripped back and pure and streamlined, I guess,
because her songwriting is very like storyteller. Do you know what I mean? As in, a lot of even the tracks from Fearless, they tell story, even if they're about like high school stuff or high school sweethearts and stuff, but these characters are sort of like richer, if you know what I mean. As in, some of the portraits, like The Last Great American Dynasty, is about a specific person. It's just an interesting part of her songwriting that's flexed, and I think you do get a lot more from songwriting when it's, you know, when you take out all of the fireworks and the colors and stuff. If you can play a song like an acoustic guitar or piano and it sounds great, that's the mark of a really good song. Do you know what I mean? It can sort of stand on its 2 feet. Yeah. I think Taylor's obviously always had that because she's come from like a folk background. So it's almost like a circle or something. It's like a reconnection to it, isn't it? Mm. And then, I mean, what were your thoughts on Evermore when it came out?
I gave it, like, to be honest with you, I've not given it as many listens. I was very surprised. Like, when I saw the tweet that it was coming out of Bidby, and the first thing I did was text your girlfriend Chantel. It was Chantel that texted me, I can't remember, but I was like, oh my god, that she's releasing another one. But it was a very kind of Frank Ocean-esque, wasn't it? Like, in terms of just
a drop
out of nowhere. I don't think it was anticipated at all. Like, it was just a bit random, wasn't it? So
If anything, it was more of a surprise than the first one, because I think the first one was a bit of a surprise drop,
but massive.
You just didn't really expect there to be two in one calendar year.
I listened to it on I listened to it literally like 2 a.m. or something, really quickly, not enough, you know, not on, just kind of skipping through the songs a bit, really, but probably shouldn't do that. But yeah, it is. I can see what she means. It is like a sister album. It's kind of like, you know, you've got those first two Mumford albums. They kind of assist each other in a way. So they're very similar sounding. And also like the first two Arctic albums, they're very kind of similar sounding. But yeah, I didn't kind of gravitate to it as well as Folklore, but maybe that's just because Folklore, I feel like I rinse albums if I love it. So I feel like Folklore, I was just in that mode where I was listening to it a lot, and then Evermore came about. I was like, oh shit, I'm not sick of this yet. So I find it hard to listen to something else that
that's
she's
true.
Done. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, it's almost like, I'm still into this other one. There is really good songs on Evermore as well.
Yeah,
I think because obviously I've been going back to it, just, you know, for the purpose of this podcast as well. But it's still like, it's not like she's just doing it for the sake of it. There was like an agenda there, and there's still great songs there. I just think over the whole albums on both of them, I feel like the first sort of 2/3 of it are like really strong, and then it sort of slips off a bit in that last third. And, you know, sometimes you just want like a really clean, you know, 10, 15 track album. Do you know what I mean? Rather than having 30 songs to sort through. Obviously, you know, that's the way it's built now. People want to bring out way more material because it just does better for them. But But yeah, it's sort of interesting that, yeah, she brought them both out in at the same time. And obviously, it's reflective of the time. It's quite a knee-jerk response to her surroundings and stuff. And we haven't really, I don't think we've probably had many, much music that's being created in lockdown yet, apart from, you know, the Taylor stuff and the Paul McCartney album that came out last year. I know there's probably been a few other exceptions, but it's going to be interesting to see what those albums are like and what the vibe is. But for the most part, both of these albums tend to have some sort of like, it's sort of got like a escapist quality, but also, you know, the songwriter's quite introverted and the production is really stripped back. And I think, yeah, the guys, as in Jack Antonoff and Aaron Dessner, do a great job. I mean, are you familiar with The National much at all?
Only for you. And to be honest, obviously, like the Coney Island on these, one of these albums as well. So where they feature, so not massively. I think that would be one that you need to send me a playlist on, and I need to get into them. It's one of the, I tried listening to a couple of songs, and it's one of those where like it's a strong voice, you know. It's kind of like, I feel like it's a Marmite voice, where you love it or hate it. But I feel like I could get there. Like, I think it's the whole Arcade Fire thing again. For me personally, it took me so long to get into Arcade Fire. Like, I know, but there was always something there keeping me there and making me listen to more, even though I wasn't loving it. I don't know. It was weird. It was like watching like a, for those people that love horror films, I guess, like there's something about it that I liked. So I just kept listening. And then suddenly overnight one day, it literally just clicked and I was obsessed with Arcade Fire. And I think that's probably one of those bands, maybe. I don't know.
I think that's right. And I mean, The National aren't, I wouldn't say they were very like instantly melodic, as in you don't really remember the melodies that well after first hearing them. And that's what really has you coming back. But something unravels as you listen to it more. I think Arcade Fire had the same thing. I think mainly because of the voice, really. As in, they're quite unique voices. And there's something in the compositions that, I don't know, it pulls you in, or stuff gets revealed over time. Or maybe it's like Stockholm Syndrome. You just spend so much time with it that you're like, oh yeah, I've got to like this. But no, I genuinely loved The National. But I think it did take me a while to get into their vibe. But I think it really works well with Taylor's songwriting. And obviously, she has that really strong melodic quality and can do, you know, very nice storytelling style songwriting. So that matches really nice. I actually did this, like, Chantel brought up this BuzzFeed quiz the other day, and it was like, you have to try and answer whether it's Taylor Swift or Bruce Springsteen lyrics. And obviously, Bruce Springsteen is a big storyteller, but it's actually genuinely hard. I mean, I'm a big Bruce fan. I wouldn't say I know all of his albums like really well, but there's some I was getting wrong, and I was like, oh yeah, shit. Like, they're actually quite, they're more similar than I think they are.
That's quite interesting, actually. Yeah. Do you know how that relationship came about with The National? Like, how she met the guy?
I think she I think, do you know what? Actually, I know that they didn't meet until they did this thing for Disney Plus, where they did like a live session.
Yes.
So they didn't meet in the duration of the recording. They were just firing emails back to each other. So I think she said National was one of her favorite bands. So she just sort of, if you're Taylor Swift, you can help your favorite band, I guess, and ask them to help out. And then Jack Antonoff had worked on the previous couple of albums, or since 1989 as well. So I think they were already pally. And then you have, but Aaron Dessner's sound is the one that really defines the actual production and everything, which is interesting. I actually saw in the news of it, I think I sent you an article, Neil, but you saw the thing about the theme park that are trying to sue Taylor Swift over the name Evermore, which is a bit ridiculous. Like, obviously, if you're a it's like you're always going to try in it if it's like somebody of that caliber, which is a sad thing, really, because everything you do, you're going to second guess. But essentially, there's a fantasy themed amusement park in Utah, which is called Evermore, and it was, I think, so apparently guests began asking whether the Evermore album was a result of a collaboration between Evermore and Taylor Swift, or some other type of relationship. So they basically had a big thing about the fact that the Evermore album came out. They went down in the search rankings and stuff like that, so people weren't getting visibility to their page. But you know the difference between like an Evermore album cover or an Evermore theme park. Yeah. I mean, I doubt there's any mix up at Christmas, you know, like somebody getting like an Evermore like ticket rather than the LP of Taylor Swift, you know what I mean?
Sure. I've actually just received an email from Evermore Park saying we can't use their name in the pod, so can we just edit this out, please? I think they've really got a case.
They are on it.
The whole thing is ridiculous, isn't it? It's proper... what does it say? It's proper lockdown news. Desperate news story, but at the same time, like a desperate ploy. And imagine being someone like Taylor Swift, where like she must get this shit all the time. Like, and anyone, to be honest, in the limelight, you must just get like lawsuits flying. And you know, with the, we all know, like culture over there is this very like a firing line culture, where it's a suing culture, isn't it? So they must have all these stupid, ridiculous attempts coming at them left, right, and center. And this is just the one that slipped through the cracks. But
I wonder if there's like a top 10 list of like the feeblest attempts at suing.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's just, if anything is massive, you're going to go for it. It's like, I mean, the Evermore Park, it's sort of like a fantasy sort of vibe. I doubt you'll be able to get sued on like a musical level for like influencers or anything, but it's like you can do, I'm just looking on their website, it says, yeah, you can do archery, axe throwing, the bird and reptile show, horse and pony interaction, which is a weird, that's a weird phrasing really, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, do you get to ride him? Is that interacting? I don't know.
Yeah, I've just found some weird ones as we've been speaking of some weird lawsuits that have gone on in the world of music, to be honest.
Oh, go on.
No, I'm reading this one for the first time. It's Slipknot. So it says Burger King got into some serious beef with Slipknot in 2005 after using fictional rock band Cock Rock in their chicken fry adverts. Slipknot threatened to sue the fast food chain for using a look-alike, sound-alike band in order to influence the Slipknot generation to purchase chicken fries. There's just loads of stuff, but there are some very famous ones.
That's quite disrespectful, though, because they're calling them Cock Rock. Was that the name of the band?
Yeah.
That would be quite offensive, to be fair.
There's some funny ones as well, like you got... Frank Sinatra's estate tried suing this hot dog business called Frank's Sinatra. And apparently they hit back with baffling explanations for their business name. So first they claimed Frank's referred to Frankfurters, which is believable.
Right, yeah.
And Sinatra was Italian for duck or Drake. So and then it says then that the name was inspired for fictional country, the People's Republic of Sinatra. Suffice to say, Frank Sinatra lost.
Wow, that's incredible! I did not know that. So it was like, that's the thing though. Like, I feel like I'd never want to have like a really big song or anything, because I feel like you just gets so much admin. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like if shit like that happens, it's like. That's weird. So the Frank Sinatra thing, what? So that must have been like years and years ago. Was it when he was still alive?
Oh, yeah. I think it's literally like during that time. Although it does say the estate, so I'm not sure.
That's the thing. Yeah. The estates are the ones that pick. I doubt Frank was sitting there.
Why would you
like
care?
A Manhattan with Dean Martin saying, there's this fucking hot dog business man. Try to rip me off. Like, what does he care?
I know. If there was a burger restaurant named Madden's or something named after me, I'd be so... That'd be the dream.
Yeah. Go mascot or something.
Yeah. Like
so, Neil, we both got these lists of tracks that we pulled together from Folklore and Evermore.
Mm.
So, I'm saying that we have two names for it. So, we do Everlore and Folkmore, right? We present our tracks and then people can vote on social media or whatever what one they'd like the best, and then they can put their own ones forward. Just as a little idea, How many, what's the ratio of Folklore to Evermore tracks on your list?
Question.
I've actually got 8 from Evermore. And then I've got 7 from Folklore.
Yeah, hang about. You can edit this gap. Yeah, so I think I've actually got about 7 Evermore and 8 Folklore, actually. So it's quite an even split.
Interesting. Well, I guess that was the idea, as in like having around half and half from each.
Yeah.
So what do you go for track one then?
So track one, I have gone for The Last Great American Dynasty.
Interesting. So you're starting off with the real storyteller one.
Yeah, and so you'll find that the theme with mine is I like to start albums with a, like, so as if I produce albums all the time.
Yeah, I like to do my stuff in a
very different way. Well, I worked with George Holm back in 88. yeah, I like to start with like the, I find this album is like one of the most powerful albums, one of the powerful songs, sorry, of the album. And so yeah. I wanted to start with a bit of a bang and almost slowly depress listeners as it goes on. And then maybe a bit of hope right at the end. That's kind of the theme. So I wanted to kind of get that out, rather with the way it is anyway. It's kind of up and down like a roller coaster, I guess, with the album. But I kind of wanted to put all the energetic ones at the start, I guess.
Interesting. So yeah, I mean, that's an interesting track one. It's because that song in particular, there's a big Rolling Stone article on it actually about the real person, well, the person it's about, her name was Rebecca Harkness, who was this composer, sculptor, dance patron, philanthropist back in the 20s. And as I understand it, Taylor Swift had a house in Rhode Island and this Rebecca Harkness used to own it back in the day. So she almost did like a parallel between her life and the life of Rebecca Harkness, which is an interesting concept, I think.
Mm.
And it's weird because when I was actually looking at the lyrics, I always thought it was like the bit about losing on card game bets. I thought it was with Dolly. And when I looked into it, it was like Dali, as in Salvador Dali.
Yeah.
Because this Rebecca Harkness used to know Salvador Dali and like hang out with him.
It's actually so interesting, that whole story, isn't it? Like, because I actually read the article before you sent it across to me. Yeah, so many references. There's like... She does a really good job in kind of telling that story, I think. But, and it's also kind of like a nod to her being the new Rebecca Harkness in a way, because I don't know if you, I can't remember if it says in this article, but she's, Taylor Swift's caused a bit of controversy herself, because she actually now lives there in the mansion. That's the...
Yeah, so you're sort of having to go at a few things here, or like the way it's all set up, but then... You're living that life as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like she's kind of told the story of Rebecca Harkness, how she's this person that's kind of, you know, inherited all this money, and she's just really driving down that husband's family name and the business name with all her like lavish parties and expensive habits and these crazy, like filling a swim pool of champagne, and these crazy stories that are reported as kind of rumors slash, you know, true in those days. But then at the same time, if you look into it, at the same household, there's been a lot of controversy around Taylor Swift, that she's actually had loud parties herself, quite a lot of people complaining about stuff happening there in her time in the house. So it's a strange kind of 360 thing, to be honest. But I'm not sure what the message she's trying to kind of portray using that song, whether it's like okay to be like that or whether it's it's interesting.
The main hook is like she had a marvelous time ruining everything,
yeah,
and then I think where's the lyric where she's like free of women with madness, their men and bad habits, and then it was bought by me. So it's almost like, oh yeah, and then I bought it. So it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that song.
Yeah, I think the character portrayed is good. I guess I don't know exactly what the connection is between her I actually left the number one as the number one on the track number one on Folklore, which is the one. I just really like it as an opener. What's that?
A bit lazy, but go on.
Yeah, basically, I've just done folklore. I just thought that was a really good opening track, like quite patient, builds nicely. And then I had Last Great American Dynasty as the second one, because I thought it was a bit more upbeat. And sort of get into it from there. What was your track two?
Track two, I got Gold Rush.
So I got that as my track four. Because okay. I think, Gold Rush is sort of, there's that string of songs on Evermore where it's got like that really nice plucked acoustic guitar, and it's almost like I can't really describe the vibe of it, but it's there's some that are on a similar sort of level in terms of the sound of it. And all I just remember is like the real plucky acoustic guitar, which I think is on Willow as well, which is my number three.
That's my number three as well.
There we are. Well, we're matching up here quite a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
The one. Are you not? Is the one? Does the one feature on your list?
It's number four.
Oh, right.
Wait, okay. Hang on. So if we actually pick the same top four?
Almost. So I've got track one, the one, track two, Last Great American Dynasty, track three, Willow, track four, Gold Rush.
Yeah, and I've got the Last Great American Dynasty, Gold Rush, Willow, and then the one.
Interesting.
That's all so right. Weird.
Marry me?
Let's see. Marry me? Let's see if the pattern continues.
Yes,
number five.
So I have gone for No Body, No Crime featuring Haim.
All right. So that is in my list, but I put that a bit further down. What was it you liked about that one?
I don't know. I just thought it kind of it's a bit fun. I think it's a bit less personal. That I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't looked into like the lyrics of this song and stuff like that.
It's pretty like self-explanatory. As in, it's one another like storytelling song.
Yeah,
it's like about. It's quite interesting because it's about like the husband cheating and stuff, and it's almost like is it a crime story as well? It's quite interesting that they had, you know, she references SD, who's a friend of mine, and SD's one of the sisters in Haim.
Mm.
She's the bass player. That was like a really interesting take that they actually put themselves as the characters in it.
Yeah.
But like you say, it's mostly like quite a fun record, that one.
Yeah, I just think it was quite, and again, I'm trying to go for that kind of, I guess not like these like, exciting songs that start, but just the less depressing ones towards the top. And I'm a massive Haim fan, so they're always going to make the list.
Yeah, me too, man. They're great. I think, that one's is. What's the lyric about the life insurance policy in that one? It's just quite an interesting turn of phrase in a Taylor Swift song. It's like, luckily he got you to have a big life insurance and policy or something like that, but it's quite funny like to throw in those financial terms in like a pop song.
Yeah,
I sort of wonder how it went down with the Tay-Tay Swift crowd there.
What did you have for number five?
So my track five, I kept a tradition a bit, because are you familiar with Taylor Swift's like track number five tradition?
No, I'm annoyed now. I'm the one who's meant to be the big fan. Yeah, go on.
So essentially the track five tradition is something that Taylor Swift had throughout her whole back catalogue, and essentially track five is always like the most emotional song on the album. Ooh. So it's almost like quite a loose description of it, but it's quite a cool tradition to keep up, I think, for the fans. So, I mean, for that reason, I kept like the number five on Folklore, My Tears Ricochet, which I think is a really beautiful track. Really love that one.
Wow, I never knew that. That's mind blowing. I find myself now just looking at what track fives were on.
Yeah,
each does albums. It add up? Yeah, I mean, I've only looked at Fearless one, Fearless first, and White Horse is number five, and that's, yeah,
yeah,
that is very depressing.
a tearjerker.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's mind-blowing.
There we are. Little facts for you there. So, I sort of kept with that tradition. I have My Tears Ricochet. Track six, I went for Dorothea, which I think is a beautiful tune. Did that one feature Dorothea for you?
It didn't, actually. No, I cut that.
I cut it right out.
No, didn't.
No, I really like Dorothea. It's like quite a sweet little piano waltz sort of vibe. But yeah, it sort of reminds me of, do you know that Rod Stewart song where it's like, I wish I knew what I knew now when I was younger. It's got that similar, there's like a vocal hook on it that's exactly the same as that.
Oh, okay.
But still really like it though. I think it's a nice little tune. What do you have as your
number six? I was Invisible String.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Invisible String, I think from memory, it's more of the country intro, right? Or have I made that up?
Yeah. I think you might be right, as in, like, it's, I remember it being quite plucky, if that's the term to describe it.
Yeah.
So we've gone in. Yeah, right. So we've gone in two different directions on number six. So the first stray. And then number seven, I've actually got the track seven, which I think is one of the best on the two records.
Okay.
Reminds me a lot of last summer, actually. We were listening to it a lot, like in the car and stuff, going out and about to, well, we can only go to parks and shit.
Mm.
But this sort of reminds me quite a lot of that. And obviously track seven.
Yeah.
Seven, yeah. You know? Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, so I was reading up about, like, this and her album, because, you know, like, Taylor Swift always has so many Easter eggs, and she's got the fan base now to just, I'm sure probably loads of fans have like uncovered Easter eggs that she probably didn't even mean to include herself. But like when you look into, you know, that being number seven, and then eight on that track list is August, and obviously the eighth month is August. People are trying to guess what that date is, whether it's 7th of August, whether it's a date that's special. Like there's a lot of rumors going around that Taylor Swift and her boyfriend actually secretly got married on that day, potentially.
Okay.
A lot of rumors going around, but yeah, I believe I was having a barbecue on the 7th of August. I don't know what you were doing, but
I'll have to check the old Rolodex, mate. See what's going on. So that's it. So is it just because it's like number eight and they think there's like a parallel there?
I believe so. Yeah. I think they think that she's chucking in a secret date there, 7th of August. And there might be something else to it as well. She might have mentioned that date before as well, but yeah, people are reading into it and that maybe it's a date that she secretly got married or something else happening, or they think she might drop something announcement on the 7th of August, or yeah, who knows?
Okay. Was that your number seven then?
No.
I asked you for the fucking number seven.
No, so my number seven, which obviously saying that, I think that's really cool if it is like a little note to a date, but I've just completely gone off that and gone purely on how the songs sound going in together. But so for me, I put number seven as Marjorie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, it's starting to get a bit more emotive now. Yeah, the album terms of the music. But so yeah, it's gonna take a real dark turn soon.
So that's how you phase it, because I've almost had the emotional bit in the past few tracks. Mm. And then what I wanted to do on track eight is bring in Nobody, No Crime, because that was a bit of like a funner sort of vibe to it. So it's almost like I'm thinking like two different sides of a record, like you turn it around and you got this fun little crime tune after having the emotional trauma of seven. That's the way I thought of it anyway. So, yeah, that's my number eight. We already talked about Nobody, No Crime. What's your number eight?
My number eight is Exile featuring
Bon Iver. So why did you tell us this August story?
I know. You know me. So, I contradict myself.
the great contradictor, yeah. We'll see. So that's the one with Bon Iver, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, is that how you say it? I thought it was Bon Iver. God knows.
I don't know. There's you know, like Bowie elites are always like, oh yeah, it's David Bowie. Mm. As you can tell, I'm relieved, for fuck's sake. And then if people say Bowie, they get annoyed or something. But I'm sure he didn't give a shit. But no. Bon Iver might actually be really picky about it. I haven't really seen him say. You don't often say your own name, do you?
No. Know
yeah. But yeah. So I mean, yeah. That's a great chat. Do you like Bon Iver's voice in it? Do you think it complements Taylor's vibe well?
I think it does complement. I think they both have quite longing voices, of like quite lonely voices. I mean, Taylor Swift's not always, she doesn't always sound kind of that lonely, isolated feel, but I think these albums sound like that, and I think they complement each other. So yeah, I've kind of got Bon Iver, whatever you want to pronounce it. I've got both his songs actually featured on my list. I've never actually listened to him loads as like a one-off artist, but everything I've heard, I've always really loved it. So I am a fan of his. But yeah, I do think they complement each other quite well.
He's great, man. Yeah, the album 22 A Million, that was out in, I think it was out in 2016. That was the one I got really into. And then I think his earlier stuff is a bit more folky. Obviously, he did a lot of work with Kanye and stuff. But yeah, I've got both his are in mine as well. I've got Exile at number 10. Then number 9 I had as Cardigan, which I was like, originally I took it out because I think maybe, like, you know, the whole song's about feeling like a cardigan on someone's skin. You took it out. No, I originally did, but then I was like, actually, I really like this song. I think, yeah, it's got that really good lyric about, was it, your father running like water. For some reason, I like that lyric for some reason.
Okay.
And I think you can buy the actual cardigan if you wanted a little. Well, maybe that's a spoiler for your next birthday.
What's that?
You the actual cardigan in the you can actually buy the cardigan online.
Really?
Taylor Swift.
What, from like the video or something?
Yeah, you can get it. Yeah, you can get it from a merch store. Wow. It's just like a, you know, like a cozy little cardigans aren't really, are they in fashion right now?
I don't know. That's the point of fashion right now, isn't it? Anything's in fashion if you want to make it in fashion. Not being fashionable sort of like is in fashion.
To me, it looks like a cricket jumper,
okay,
with like stars on its sleeves. Do you like the sound of that?
I'm all over that. Yeah,
cream cable knit cardigan with black black matte buttons. Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Oh, I love that. Yeah,
£40.
Oh,
bit steep.
Yeah.
But yeah, love that song. That was my 9 and 10. What was your 9 and 10?
9 was Coney Island featuring The National.
Yep.
Good song. 10, Long Story Short.
One thing I'm really interested in, actually, now you mentioned The National, because I have got that as well. That's my track 12. As I said, I'm a big fan of The National. And I guess The National audience is... you're probably like generally a bit older, as in like probably people in their 30s and, you know, beyond that, just because they sort of became really big in around 2007. And the guys themselves are a bit older. They actually have quite interesting lives because they had regular jobs until they were about 29 or 30. And then they got into the National, sort of started taking off. Like, he was like a creative director in New York, and then suddenly it took off. But especially the songs on The Boxer, it's almost, you can really relate to it because it is like, you know, he's talking about real life stuff, as in being at work and, you know, having like the time to yourself with your significant other. It's a really like great portrait of that. But I'm sort of wondering whether when The National get back out on tour, then all these Taylor Swift fans will start showing up to their shows. So it's like you've got these like sort of older guys and girls, and then like these sort of like more teenage age, although the Taylor Swift audience is probably like way broader than I'm sort of thinking in my head. But I know typically you have the image of like a a teenage girl or something being into Taylor Swift. But yeah, it'd be quite interesting to see if that impacts, because I know Taylor Swift fans are very loyal, and if she's like teaming up with somebody on such like a deep level as she's done across these albums, that I must, can imagine them having the interest to go out and seek the national. So the last five, I've actually got a suite of Evermore songs apart from the last one.
Oh.
So my track 11 is Closure, which has got that really cool, like, it's almost like a staccato vocal thing. It's track 12, I had as the Coney Island national song. Mm-hmm. Then I got the Bon Iver collab Evermore, and then that song Happiness, which is like got quite a nice vibe to it. What's your like 11 to 14?
And then we'll talk about the final track. Yeah, that's interesting. We started off so in sync, Sean, but
we've gone drifted. Hooray.
Yeah. So I really like the idea of putting 11, 12, 13 together, because I don't know if you have read into it, but you've got Cardigan, August and Betty, right? And they're like almost three songs that tell a story. So you've got, like a love triangle. This is what I've read, you know. Apparently it's about these three different almost characters of this love triangle, two girls, one boy. So yeah, the Cardigan is the first of that story. And then you've got August, which, you know, people are guessing is the name of this other woman. And then Betty is either Taylor Swift or the other woman. I forget the actual order. And people are naturally trying to kind of think whether this is her own experience of whether she got caught up in an affair or was she the other woman or what. So, but yeah, they're quite interesting when you look into the lyrics, those three songs, but they're not together on the album. But I kind of like the idea of telling that story from different perspectives all consecutively. Yeah.
Interesting. I'll have to read a bit more into that. Those three tracks being sort of, so they're saying they're sort of biographical, or they could be.
Yeah. I can't remember the order of perspectives, but they're each song is from a different perspective of one of the three characters, basically.
That's cool.
So you've got like, and August then, is such a, like, I think August is my favorite song out of both albums. I think it's beautiful, but I think it's probably the one song you think more summer. I think it's fair to say, like, it's quite uplifting. The sound of it, it's quite summery and vibrant and bright. But it's all, I think it's meant to represent having that kind of, like, it's almost again, I have to look into lyrics, but it's like a temporary, not fake romance, but it's something that's not going to be permanent. It's interesting when you look into it, but I think August is, for me, the first track I was going to have on, like, the easiest decision.
That's like definite. Yeah, it's like, I say, what's your number 14 then?
Number 14, I've got Evermore.
Cool.
With Bon Iver.
And then track 15, my closer, I had as August, actually. Because I agree with you, it's one of my favourite songs on the record as well. Mm. I think that ending with the strings and everything is a really great way to finish off like this suite of songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a favourite, I think.
Yeah.
And then what was your closer?
I could definitely see August as the closer, to be fair. So
you could see it, but you didn't want to do it, did you?
Because I'm better than you. No, but yeah, so I had seven. Seven's one of those tracks where, you know, it's the one that starts like But so that's one of the tracks where I can see it either being bang in the middle of the album, almost splitting the album up, like an interlude sort of thing, or something to close out. And I just quite liked having it as the last. It felt like a credits song.
That's an interesting take, actually, as in like it being a closing credits, like a almost not a finale, but like, there's something that ends this, sort of sweet, I guess.
Yeah, it's quite peaceful. Like, I quite liked it. It's not one I'm going to put on and really listen and delve into, but it's quite like a nice, yeah, okay, like the credits start rolling and then starts, and then you kind of turn to your partner, other half, whoever you're watching a film with or whatever, and you're like, oh, that was nice, yeah, one there. And then it's just kind of in the background. You're not noticing the song, but it's good enough that you're not noticing, but not bad enough that you are noticing. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting take. Yeah, I think Seven and August are my favourite of the lot. I like My Tears Ricochet as well. I found it's almost like when you're actually sequencing it, it's actually quite hard because they're all of the same mood. There's not many ways you can switch up the gears for it, because that's what great albums have, that really good pacing where there's like, I don't know, the movements complement each other.
Mm.
But because it's like so of the same tone and tempo and volume and stuff like that, it's quite hard to actually make it a good solid piece altogether. To be fair, there are a lot of tracks towards the end of the official albums where I tail off a bit, or I get a bit less interested. But I know I like these sort of this bunch of put together. I think there's been a fair few crossovers.
I've probably got like 60-70% crossover. Imagine, it's quite a lot.
Well, so what we'll put out our track lists, Everlore and Folkmore, and then people can vote, and then they can also suggest what they might put forward as well. So we'll put it out to the people, man, and we'll see what comes back and unveil the results.
Nice.
All right then, Neil. Good chatting about Tay. I'm sure. She'll probably have another album out in like 2 weeks.
7th of August.
Well, there we are. Already there.
It would be called like Thought Park.
Yeah.